And welcome to another episode of the Healthcare Executive Insights Podcast. My name is Elliot Sloan with the McAllen Group. Today, we have a very special guest, Angie Manson, the CEO at Elevate Addiction Services.
Yes, Angie, thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Thanks for joining us. So, Angie, tell me a little bit more about your professional background and what led you to create Elevate Addiction Services.
Well, the short version is I started drinking and using at a very young age, 11 years old, and I went down a bad path pretty young. So by the time I was only 21 years old, I was facing a lot of trouble, and I was given the option to go to rehab or go to prison. And I opted for rehab. And fast forward 28 years later, I'm still here. So I stayed, I worked, I got out of all the issues that I'd gotten into, learned every facet of the organization, got into counseling clients myself, and eventually took over from our executive director and have been running down that path for a while. We were another program for 20 years, a nonprofit, and decided to sort of venture out on our own. And so about 8 years ago, we created Elevate Addiction Services, which with my 20 years experience and knowing, you know, good practices that we knew were going to work to help people get over their addiction, we put those into practice, tracked our outcomes, and here we are today with Elevate. And that's pretty much the quick version of where we're at.
Sure. So you can really relate to these patients that are coming through the program. You've been in their shoes, you've been at your lowest points of your life, and you were able to crawl back, and not just crawl back, you came back swinging.
Absolutely. And that, and built an army of like-minded individuals. You know, we used to think of it as a negative mark against us because, you know, I think people would say, oh, you're just, you know, rehab run by a bunch of former addicts. What do you guys know? It's like, well, what don't we know? We actually know because we've been there. We've experienced it from both sides, and we know how to help people who are like us and seeking help, and, you know, how to have compassion, but also hold them accountable and not let them be the victim of their addiction. And so it's probably every single graduation we hear clients say, it's so refreshing to have people who understand us being the people that deliver service to us.
Absolutely. It makes a lot of sense. And you're really developing a culture from within as you're able to get people back on their feet. And then those people are inspired to want to help others that have been in their shoes. So it's the power of serving. And I'm sure people really learn that through your program.
Absolutely. And giving back. And a lot of people feel like they've done a lot of damage and they want to sort of make up for that.
Yeah.
And the other thing that's really been great about what we do is we're removing the stigma of, you know, once an addict, always an addict, or, you know, who are these people to society? It's like, well, they're what they are is people who've overcome massive adversity. And now they're amazing people who are out there helping others. So we're really trying to shift the viewpoint of the world, which is, you know, used to be very negative connotation to have been an addict. People would hide it. It was like, you know, HIPAA, like, don't mention who's here. Like, we want to, you know, pretend like this isn't happening. But now I think with more people coming forward with their own recovery journeys, as well as like with us, where we're employing them and they're helping others, we're coming out of that stigma into we're actually better than a lot of people because we've overcome mass adversity and now we're kicking ass in life. Sorry.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. So in your opinion, how connected are mental health issues and substance abuse?
I mean, I see it, especially since the pandemic, it has risen incredibly. But I absolutely believe, and Elevate has helped prove this, that if we can tackle them kind of as the same thing, they can overcome both. So for example, we started doing outcome studies the day we started Elevate, and they would check for things like depression, anxiety, you know, happy, sad, just all 1,000 questions. And then they, through the program, will answer these questions. And then after they leave, continue to answer these questions. And the thing that shocked me the most is by people coming in and handling their addiction, all those side effects that they were struggling were handled as well when they left the program. No more depression, no more anxiety, or very little. All the things that were they thought were mental health issues were really just side effects of their addiction. And by putting and pouring into themselves and doing the work for 2 months, it handled all that stuff. So besides getting sober, they've handled a lot of their mental health issues.
So it sounds like a big part of your program is dealing with the voices in your head, so to speak, finding mindfulness and really focusing on mental exercises to constantly be embedding positivity into your subconscious mind so that when that voice triggers, it's time to go get a drink, time to crack the bottle, time to do whatever, those mindful practices are able to stop that thought in its track and say, here's why we're not going to do this.
Yep. 100%. You practice playing the tape forward. Like, I could go do that, but what is going to happen if I did do that? You start to like, look at the longer, yes, it'll feel real good for a second, but then look at all the stuff that's going to happen that I'm going to have to clean up afterwards. And so you start to really, like you said, utilize the mindfulness to sort of work through some of those triggers. And the cool thing about mindfulness is you could take it with you anywhere. Like you could be, you know, in the Sahara Desert and get triggered by something. And you're like, I've got this tool with me and I can utilize it. And the other big thing that we use is we really try to get people to, and this helps with mental health almost more than anything on the planet, is exercise. You know, infusing their bodies with moving every day, getting sunlight, pouring into their overall health so that they're feeling better, which has them doing better. When they're doing better and they're feeling better, they're looking better, which makes them feel better. And we get all those things going again that they used to need a chemical or something to create that feeling. They now know how to generate that feeling in themselves naturally.
So how do we as a country, as a society, combat the growing drug and alcohol addictions?
I think it's got to be twofold, threefold. First thing I would say is, society needs to realize that we are being overly medicated. Everywhere we look, if you don't like how you feel, take something. If you don't like how you feel, take something. If you don't like how this is going, take something. Everything is just getting us more and more and more medicated. And by checking out and just trying to medicate whatever's going wrong, putting band-aids on everything and not like handling what's really going on at the root, at the core, addressing traumas, addressing what's going on, we're not really fixing any problems. And so I would absolutely say we got to stop the medication, the over medications. Let's confront our feelings. Again, this is where mindfulness comes in. Sit with that emotion. This person cut you off. You're upset. You were late. It's like, okay, let's sit with that. You know, why is this triggering me? What is this making me feel this way? And then working through it, it's temporary, it passes. Now I can go on with my life. So I'd say that's the biggest one. And we see that we're probably one of the only rehabs that don't medicate past the detox part of the program, because we want people to fully learn how to see and experience life without the need to medicate, whether it's prescription or otherwise.
What are your thoughts as far as big pharma taking more responsibility with people's addiction to prescription medications, specifically opioids? We all know there's a pandemic. Do you think they've taken enough responsibility for this opioid pandemic, I'll call it?
I don't think so. I mean, you see big payouts, but they're just a fraction of the amount of profits that they've received from that. You know, now the solution is like provide Narcan to everybody. Look, people are going to overdose. So let's give them the solution when that happens. So I don't think so. A big part of it, I think, also is education. Like we don't see the amount of deaths, like the amount of deaths from opioid addiction over the last couple of years has skyrocketed. Like, and nobody even knows about it because we're look over here, talk about this, don't talk about that.
Yep.
And it's awful, because it used to be if you like died from an overdose. Odds were you were an addict. You were shooting needles. You were sharing them. You took too much. You got some bad stuff. Every now and then, somebody new trying it for the first time would overdose because they didn't know, you know, what they were getting into. But nowadays, like with fentanyl, kids are dying left, right, center. Like they think they're taking a, you know, a fun drug at a party, and before you know it, they're dead. And so the fentanyl overdoses are through the roof and attacking kids, and nobody's talking about it.
Sure. Do you see a potential for pain relief solutions that don't involve opioids? You know, do you think there's ways that people can deal with chronic or acute pain without needing medication?
I would say absolutely. It's just, are you willing to go through the work to get there? So sure. For example, I had, when I had my daughter, I threw my back out. I couldn't even, cause I put on a lot of weight and I twisted, couldn't even leave the bed. I was in chiropractic care for 2-3 years, couldn't work out because every time I did, my back would hurt. Kind of thought this is my lot in life for the rest of my life. And then, you know, my group, at work, they started getting into CrossFit, and I'm like, oh, you know, I don't really think I could do that. I got this heart condition. I got this back condition. I got all these problems, but it was so much fun. I didn't want to miss out either. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go, but I'm going to modify everything. And of course the first year there was a lot of trips to the chiropractor, a lot of, you know, pains and aches and things like that. But within second year, now I'm only going if I'm getting an injury. 3 or 4 years into consistency of working out and taking care of myself, I haven't been to the chiropractor in years. And so building my body strong enough to sort of prevent and handle any long-term issues has been key for me. And I think it could be for a lot of people, but it takes work and it takes consistency. And I don't think a lot of people want to wait that long. And so, you know, they want the quick fix or the quick solution.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think many people are willing to put in the work. Even if, you know, you explain to them the benefits of these healthier lifestyles and healthier eating and exercise, it just seems like as a society, we are getting more and more unhealthy physically and mentally every year that goes by.
Yep. Absolutely.
So tell me about your operation at Elevate Addiction Services. How many patients are you helping?
So we have a couple different centers. We also, one of the cool things we did with the pandemic is we pivoted, and we had literally just opened up an outpatient center in Tahoe, which is where one of my 30-day program is. And with the pandemic, we immediately had to shut it down, but we pivoted to a virtual outpatient. So I would say between the two centers plus the virtual outpatient, we're helping anywhere, you know, probably about 80 people a week between the two centers and the virtual outpatient. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I would love to help even more people. You know, we're here, we're long-term treatment. Like I said, we utilize exercise and non-medication. We use mindfulness, and it's a totally non-traditional kind of program, but our success rate is through the roof because it not just gets people sober, but it gets them winning in life, which, you know, you see a lot of people get sober, but they're kind of miserable and they're kind of white knuckling it. And they're kind of like, you know, not really living because they're scared. This makes them like ready to go tackle life and be sober doing it.
Your mind is such a powerful tool, and it could do so much damage in your life, or it can literally make you limitless.
Right.
If you know how to train it properly.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is the subconscious mind. And it's, you know, what we feed the conscious mind that really is going to impregnate the subconscious mind. And these are things you don't learn. You know, nobody teaches you these things, or it's not, I guess it's more widely adopted now. But, you know, I wish they focused more as, you know, young adults and moving into professional careers. What a game changer it is to actually have a pulse and control of how your mind operates and how it impacts your daily life.
Wow. I love that statement. Absolutely. Well, and I think where we fall down is consistency, you know, where it's like, oh, this is inconvenient. It's a pain in the butt. And you don't get that high because we're always leaving ourselves a little back door, a little cheat, a little rest day, a little this, a little that. And we're not getting to the good stuff because we're not stringing together a long enough duration of doing the right things. I mean, it takes like 66 days is the stat to create a new habit. So like when you're talking about overcoming addiction, didn't happen overnight. You know, you spent years getting into that condition. So to think that it's going to change overnight is crazy. So you need to give yourself a long enough runway of changing all those negative habits into positive habits where you start to feel the real compounding effects of positivity going forward.
Absolutely. And it's amazing. I've done a few 60, 90. I think I've done the longest would have been a 4-month detox without alcohol.
Nice.
And your brain is so much sharper. It retains so much more information and you just have a whole nother level of clarity when you're not putting toxins into your body on a weekly, you know, multiple times a week basis for my case.
Absolutely.
I was shocked on how much better I felt the first time I did a real like 90 plus day commitment to getting full 8 hours of sleep, eating right, running as many days out of the week as I can, and just cutting alcohol off the menu.
Yep. Yep. It's that, and it's that consistency. That's where the magic comes in. It's, you know, not just being a weekend warrior or only on special occasions. It's creating that long stretch of time where you just hit like another gear. It's phenomenal without any kind of induction of alcohol, weed, pills, whatever it is, just like straight stone cold sober for as long as you can go. It's just amazing what you can achieve with that.
Do you feel as a society, we over celebrate alcohol?
Oh, for sure. I mean, 50% of our clients are in there for alcohol, and young people too. You know, it's inducted at a very young age as acceptable. The commercials. I mean, look, even during the pandemic, it was considered essential. Like the alcohol stores were left open. Health food stores were shut down, but the liquor store was remaining open. And so absolutely it's celebrated. And it's hard because it's like a good time, a bad time, a celebration, a holiday, a bad day, a weekend. Like you can find an occasion anytime to use alcohol, and it's totally socially acceptable. It's not like you're doing cocaine, you know, it's like, it's totally socially acceptable.
Yeah. And, I don't think people are really knowledgeable on the damage it's doing to them short-term and long-term.
Absolutely. I've been shocked because we've had people, young people, and I mean like early 20s coming in, detoxing from alcohol. And we do a full-blown medical detox with them, as with everybody. And long after, I would say delayed effects, a week or two later, the hallucinating, thinking people are their fathers, their mothers. And Wow. We're like, I know this guy snuck something in because why is he having these weird delayed effects? He's only 20 something years old. He was only on alcohol. They must have smuggled something in. We're drug testing him. And it's like, no, there's these weird, like, yes, they don't even talk about the amount of effects and damage that just alcohol is doing to people, young and old.
That's good. I mean, people spend a fortune on healthcare. These insurance companies, right, we all know, are making billions and billions of dollars. They need to step up and put more resources and make sure they're covering everyone out there who's suffering from mental health or substance abuse. I mean, it's obviously a massive problem and it hits everybody's home. I mean, everyone in America knows someone who's died of an overdose or has had a divorce because of alcoholism. It's close to home for everyone. And it's kind of crazy to think that a lot of people struggle to find the help they need because they don't think they can afford it.
Right. Well, and here's the other thing with the constant changing of healthcare is their deductibles just keep going higher and higher and higher before the insurance company is willing to pay. And now the insurance companies are starting to, well, they're not starting to, but it's very noticeable how many less days they're willing to authorize. It's like, here's what sucks. You have somebody who's in jail. They're like, I don't want to go back to jail. I just got this DUI. I, you know, spent 5 days here. I need to get into a program immediately. Insurance looks at that and says, you're sober. You don't need rehab. I will not approve. They will not approve paying for their rehab. And it's like, this person's trying to do the right thing. They need the help. They happen to be sober just because they were in jail. It's like, yeah, but you haven't used in 2 days. So you don't qualify for us paying for your program.
Wow. That's crazy.
So, yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, what do you tell that person? And then you as a provider can't tell them they're not paying you because you're sober, because then you're violating their policies. You just have to tell them, sorry, you just have to take it up with your insurance company. And obviously we're not going to tell somebody, listen, go get drunk over the weekend, then we can take you in, because I would never tell somebody to do that. But these are the positions that people are being put in because although health insurance will pay, they're also, you know, 3 days into detox, it's like, oh, we're going to drop their level of care. 10 days into residential. Oh, they're good. You said they had a good day. So we're going to drop them to outpatient now. Rat them out and put them on your outpatient. Give them some Suboxone if they want, you know, some medication and some outpatient, and they're going to be fine. And so that's what's happening. It's like, although they're paying, they're like reducing the amount of days that they consider that people need the help. And then it's hard to find good help, because what are you fixed in 20 days? Like, no.
No.
You were just overdosing 3 weeks ago. You're not fixed in 20 days.
And it's kind of foolish for the insurance companies, because, you know, if they're not helping these people get healthier and get on a good track, you know, there's more health issues, more serious health issues coming down the road that is going to, you know, create failures in internal organs and, you know, high blood pressure, heart attacks, whatever it may be.
Liver damage.
It costs the insurance company a lot more when somebody's in the emergency room and in a hospital, because their bodies have completely failed because they continued the drug use because they couldn't get into the program to get the help they need.
Absolutely. And we've tried to go to them with these statistics, these stats. Look at our retention. Look at how much better they do when they're put in a quality program that actually cares about it. If you extend the amount of days that you're willing to cover them, look at like how less money you'll be spending down the road. But it's so, there's so many layers and people and situations. It's very difficult to ever even get to a decision maker to say, to make your point. You know, there's definitely another agenda there, and it's not our greatest good for our personal health. That's for sure.
Yeah. I think health insurance is designed to confuse and to lead you into a dead end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unfortunately.
I know. And it sucks, because then people get upset with us. Like, you told me, you know, this 70 days would be paid for. And we're like, sorry, your insurance, like, cut you off at day seven. Like, you know, we do extend, you know, if they're close to the end of their program, we'll definitely continue to deliver service, because we want somebody to finish the entirety of the program. We don't want to say your insurance is done paying, so you're out of here.
Yeah.
So we really, in our best efforts, try to give people the product that they're come for. But when the insurance is like, you know, not willing to help them, it's very difficult for us as a business to not abide by them, or else we would be bankrupt.
Yeah, you're kind of at that mercy, which is terrible, because right. Unfortunately they are publicly traded, and their number one goal is not to help patients live their best life. That might be the service that they're providing, but that's not their number one goal. It's to maximize profits and returns for their investors and their stakeholders.
100%. And that's been a really tricky game that we've had to learn. You know, back in the day, we did cash only, and we would bill to the best of our ability, and it was reimbursement. But if your insurance didn't pay, then you paid for the cash. But then it became impossible to compete with other rehabs and people who are now with the having to pay so much for their health care. We couldn't continue in that path. And so then we started, you know, taking the insurance. But boy, we've taken so many losses of it because of these means, for like no legitimate reason. They're just like, okay, they're done. We're good. They can go.
That's crazy.
So yeah, it's almost like, and then you got to play their game. It's like, well, no, they're not really doing that good. I mean, they said they had a good day, but we think it's imposter syndrome, you know, whatever
yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
But just because we are trying to fight for the patient's best interest. Yeah. You got it.
Yeah, that's terrible. They put you in that situation that you got to get creative like that. But that just proves how much you guys care about these outcomes for each and every one patient.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I wish they would too, because then we might not be in this epidemic that we're not talking about. Because again, their idea, what they would much rather do than pay for residential long-term program is to, you know, give up those, you know, that fentanyl and that alcohol you're on. Here, let us give you our legal drugs. Now you're on 5 different medications, one to wake up, one for your mood stabilizer, one so you don't overdose, one so you can go to sleep. Okay, here you go. Just take these. And now there's an outpatient down the road that you can probably go to. That's what they want to pay for, because that's cheap and easy. And what they don't want to pay for is long-term, really holistic, good health.
Wow. So tell me about any technologies that have helped you and your patients. I imagine you've done telemedicine through the pandemic. What is your experience like with virtual consults? Has telemedicine been effective for you guys? And are there any other tools that you're using on a technology level to streamline care?
Yeah, so that was a big change for us with the pandemic, is going virtual with our virtual outpatient, as well as we had a lot of staff go virtual because we wanted to limit the amount of people coming in and out of the facility for safety reasons and whatnot. And so even now, a lot of our, like, say, counseling will be done via one, you know, Zoom or FaceTime or, you know, an iPad. So that has been really big. And one thing we're starting, which we're really excited about, we're kind of piloting it. We've done different things with, like, in our detox area where they've had a means to, like, test their blood pressure all the time. So, you know, we don't have to go wake them up. It just sits on their arm. We can watch the monitors. And, you know, I know hospitals have this stuff, but it's new and exciting for us.
Wearables.
And it gives us the best, wearable technology. And now we have the new one, which is, it's almost like this Whoop of mine. You know, it's going to record, like, their exercise, their eating, how do you feel? There's going to be, like, a little kiosk where they can come check in, and it uploads the information, and they can then visually look at, oh, hey, after, you know, I ate that bad meal, all of a sudden my stats kind of went like this and I felt like crap, and that's interesting. And then I slept bad that night, but hey, that day that I worked out and ate clean, I slept super good that night. And it's going to give our clients the ability to bird's eye look at what their negative and positive routines affect, and then they can take that with them when they leave.
Do you see people being able to go from an extreme abusive relationship with alcohol to finding a way to keep it in their life to some degree? Or do you think majority of people have to go, you know, I know my relationship with alcohol does not work, therefore I'm abstinent from alcohol?
Yeah, I've seen it go both ways. I think it's always a slippery slope, because what kind of person are you? Does that, you know, just on a special occasion turn into, just on a Friday night turn into, you know? And I think it's a constant check and balance. But I've definitely seen people, and probably more so people who maybe didn't have a problem with alcohol. They just did coke and fentanyl and this and that. And it's like, well, they can go back to possibly, you know, casually drinking. But it's definitely also a gateway drug. And I think when you have that addictive personality, it's always sort of playing with fire. But definitely I've seen people who were able to do it, but I would never co-sign or say you should do that, just because you don't ever want to give somebody a loaded gun and say, I think you got this though.
So I will leave you with this question. A lot of our audience is private practice owners, providers of different specialties. Some may have recently opened up their new practice, left a hospital system. Some may have been in business for many years. What has been your growth strategy that has been most successful to attracting and converting new clients, new patients, and getting your brand out there?
I would say the biggest thing is pivoting. You just have to constantly grow and change with what's happening in the world, what's happening in our sector, what's happening in the insurance companies. Like, you can't ever just say this works super good, so we're always just going to only do this. It's like, you got to constantly, And it's not, I mean, I don't feel like it's an ego thing. For other people, it is like, this is the best program. What do you mean? We've always done it this way. It's like, that stuff has got to go. You've got to constantly keep your finger on the pulse of what's changing, how to get ahead of it, how to keep modernizing it or making it more applicable for today, as opposed to just, this is the way it's always been done. And that's hard for people, especially when they've experienced success in a different way, to not want to keep doing it that way.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You can never get complacent, and you got to always be ready to change directions and roll with the punches, so to speak.
Absolutely.
What we've learned is, you know, the providers who went to medical school, they're brilliant as far as treating patients and providing high quality healthcare, but a lot of them didn't go to business school, you know, and they have a really hard time putting a well-oiled machine together when it comes to the business of their medical practice.
Oh yeah. I could see that. I mean, having a team is the most important thing. Like my team, I would say we have about 18, 19 executives, all of which have been with me 10 years plus. So we're like a well-oiled machine, because I certainly don't know how to do everything. In fact, most of us were taught, but it's like having that good community and team where you bring people in to have the strengths that are not your own. That is the key. So I would definitely recommend to them, like, build a strong team and supporting cast and do what you love to do and leave that stuff to everybody else who that's what they love to do.
Well, kudos to you and your team. It sounds like you're doing amazing work and you're touching a lot of lives and their families. So you should be very proud of what you've done so far. And I can tell with your passion for your business and the patients that you treat, you will continue to grow and scale and help many more families.
Awesome. Thank you. Absolutely. I mean, I've been doing this 28 years. Where am I going to go now? Like, this is my life. I love it. Thank you. Yes.
We wish you guys the best of luck.
Awesome. Thank you. And thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks, Angie. It was our pleasure. Have a good one.
You too.